Stripe Show podcast on a Wednesday. I'm Travis Fulton. Hope you're having a great week. And you're probably wondering, Travis, what are you doing on my screen right now? It's Wednesday. Where's Froggy? We'll get to him here in a second. Froggy in his sit-down interview with Harris English. It's a good one, folks. You're not going to want to miss it. Harris English, one of the 12 members on Team USA, participating in the Ryder Cup next week at Whistling Straits. I will be there heading up, be there three nights, emceeing a couple events, working with About Golf. I can't wait to get to Whistling Straits. And I can't wait because I love the Ryder Cup. Ryder Cup is one of my favorite events of the year. Love the team competition. Love Team USA versus Europe. And I love where we're at right now. Because right now, when you look at the Ryder Cup, this event this year just feels like it means much more than perhaps what they have been in the past. You know, in other sports, like there's games, and then there's this game is even bigger than the other games. We've got to have this game. It's a must win. And that's what it feels like this year to some degree with the Ryder Cup, is that this is a must win. The Europeans have taken it to the United States here. Over the last couple of decades, they've won 9 of the last 12. They won the last one in France, kind of embarrassed Americans, 17.5 to 10.5. Now here we are, home field advantage, Whistling Straits up in Wisconsin, Steve Stricker, a native, and our team is stacked. My goodness, this is the best team that USA has ever put together when you look at the average world golf ranking. It's under 10, for crying out loud. On paper, the United States look dominant, but we haven't won. We've looked dominant in years past, and the Europeans come out and they take it to us. Why is that? Why has that been the case? Well, I think we could all appreciate the fact that the Ryder Cup is a different event. The President's Cup, the Ryder Cup, it's a team competition. You're representing your country. Alternate shot, best ball, then singles. You don't do that in any other tournament on the PGA Tour. This is an individual sport. You show up, you have your practice round, you have your workout, you've got your trainer, some got their chef, pro-am, got your morning, afternoon tea time or afternoon, morning tea time. You make the cut, you play the weekend, rinse, repeat. Individual sport, that's the way you go about it. You're trying to play the golf course, you're trying to get it to the house and beat the other 143 players in the field. Now, this week, it's about a team. It's about a country. It's about playing for something that's bigger than yourself. And we want that to mean something to our players. I think the Ryder Cup, to the average fan, the core fan, maybe even the fringe fan to some degree, is as big as the major championships. I've been in this sport now for 44 years. I love the sport. I love professional golf. I'm a fan. I'm in the media. I'm a teacher. Ryder Cup's right there for me. It's one of my favorite events, not only in golf, but in sports. But I think in saying that, we have to be sensitive to some degree to what we ask of our professional golfers now over 12 months. It's a very busy schedule. It's a lot of demands. It's a lot of things we're asking top players to mean something to them. We know the four major championships are always going to be right there top shelf. You've got one in April, May, June, and July. Generating our schedules around that, the PGA Tour doesn't own those four majors, but they want, understandably so, their big events to mean something to you, if not even more than those major championships. In fact, we're going to call the Players' Championship and we're going to put it in March, and that's going to be the fifth major. And then we're going to do a season-long race that goes through those four major championships. And we want you to participate in that. And we're going to sprinkle in four World Golf Championships that we want you to be at, because all the other top players are going to be there. And we want Jack's tournament to mean something to you. We want Arnie's tournament to mean something to you. Respect those that came before you, Byron Nelson, Ben Hogan, and others. And then when we get to the end, we're going to play it off. We're going to play it off for three straight weeks for the FedEx Cup. And don't forget about those tournaments that when you were first coming up, they gave you the start, like the John Deere Classic, like the 3M Open. Maybe you should go back and play those as well. So we ask a lot of our players, and they go through this, and then you got the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup on the back end. And then, oh, by the way, the PGA Tour season just kicks off again, and we want the fall series to mean something to you. We're going to Napa Valley. Then we're going to come back, we're going to play the CJ Cup in Vegas, the Shriners. We want all this to mean something to you, and then figure out where to take your time off. I'm very sensitive to that. I really am. I think we ask a lot of our professional golfers, and I think it's only going to get increasingly more difficult. The player incentive program, the alliance now, the PGA Tour with the European Tour. Like, the sport's just getting bigger. I think the sport is healthy. And I think we got to be sensitive to some degree to the top players. So when we get to the end of the season and we start getting this new group, perhaps, and new way of thinking, perhaps, at least a way of thinking that is more accessible for us as the fan to listen to and understand. And what I'm talking about is, you probably saw the interview with Brooks Koepka with Golf Digest, and Brooks had a lot to say, as he usually does. And I appreciate the transparency. Let this be known. I love watching Brooks Koepka play the game. He's one of the best players in the world. No question about it. Modern game, long off the tee, can dominate a golf course with a driver, good iron player, short game check. You see the shot that he hit to win the Waste Management Phoenix Open on 17. The putter gets going. He's a major championship winner, four of them. He's one of the best players of our time. I love watching Brooks play. But when I listen to Brooks and I listen to his words, I love the transparency. I love the honesty. But as a fan and as someone who loves the Ryder Cup, the team competition, it's cringeworthy. It is. His attitude towards this competition and really a lot of things in general, Bryson including, and running his name through the public's eye and rewarding people for calling him Brooksy by sending them beer. I mean, that's another story. But just his attitude in general towards a lot of that stuff, I mean, I don't agree with. And I don't like his attitude when it comes to playing in team competition and in the Ryder Cup, as we read and we listened to in this interview with Golf Digest. And I quote, "I'd love to represent my country. I think that's fun. It's just maybe not in my DNA, the team sports thing." So even Brooks himself is admitting this is not for him, whether he's just too cool for school or whatever the case may be, this is not for him. Let's just keep this very simple, folks. This is about attitude. This is about, do you want to be there? And is this important to you? So as I finish this, where I'm going with all this, with these team competitions, because I love them. And I think it means something to really most everyone who follows this game. This is a big event. It was big when I was younger. I go back to Justin Leonard making that big putt, the miracle, Ben Crenshaw in the interview when something special is coming. This is a huge event. It's fun. I don't want Brooks Koepka there if he doesn't want to be there. So this task force that we have, these captains that we have, can we create a situation where, yes, have your points, have your automatics, have your picks, but can we field 12 people on our team that have the right attitude, that want to be there, that understand the team competition for a week, and that want to play for something perhaps a little bit bigger than themselves, and that's the United States of America. That's all I ask. I love Brooks Koepka. I like watching him play. I don't like his attitude, and particularly towards representing Team USA in a team competition. We can absorb that. Team USA needs a leader. Steve Stricker, step up. Sit down those who don't want to be there. Make an example out of them. Can we field 12 guys that want to be there, part of the team composition, and represent the USA? That's all I ask. I think we can. Football teams lose their top running back. safety. They can absorb that. Team USA is stacked. We can absorb that. I think Patrick Reed would like to be there. Team USA. I think this would mean something to Kevin Na too. I think this would mean something to Kevin Kisner. In fact, I think it would mean the world to them. And that's hard for me to say because I don't think Kevin Kisner should be on the team. But at this point, I don't care. I want someone that wants to be there. Mean something to them. It's going to do what it takes. Represent the country. It's bigger than you. That's all I ask. Can we put that together? It doesn't seem complicated. 12 guys, good attitude, all moving towards the same direction. And it's amazing if you can do that with the skill sets that you have, things loosen up. We all want to be here. Let's go. That's my rant here on a Wednesday morning, Froggy Wednesday. You know who does want to be there? Harris English. And he joins Froggy right now on the Stripe Show podcast.
Welcome into another edition of the Stripe Show podcast. It is Froggy Wednesdays, and this one is going to be extra special. I'm telling you right now, no doubt, this is it. We've been trying to put this together for a while, and it actually worked out better the way that we're going to have it now. But welcome to the Stripe Show podcast. It's brought to you by Encore Golf. Encore designs high-performance golf balls for players of all skill levels, all swing speeds. Get fitted for your perfect golf ball right now at EncoreGolf.com. Our guest today, somebody, like I said, we've been trying to get on the podcast for a while. We had it nailed down, and then we had the weather up in New Jersey during the FedEx Cup playoffs. And now I just had a feeling it was going to work out like this. Ladies and gentlemen, four-time PGA Tour winner, two times in 2021, number 11 in the world golf rankings, member of the Ryder Cup team, ladies and gentlemen, Harris English, Georgia Bulldog, on the Stripe Show podcast. Good morning, man.
Froggy, thanks for having me, man. I know we couldn't link up the past couple weeks, but like you said, I think this is a good week for it. Got a little downtime and prepping for the Ryder Cup next week, so I feel like we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd call it downtime. I mean, you must just be on a career high right now. I know you've had a great year in 2021. And you had to know that this phone call was coming. Ryder Cup competition starts 1 week from this Friday. And I know you've already been out and practiced with the guys. And what does it mean to you to be on a Ryder Cup team?
Man, it's incredible. Man, I got to play on a Walker Cup team in 2011. That was a huge goal of mine from amateur golf, collegiate golf. I mean, I always had that as one of my goals, and made that team. But to make a Ryder Cup team is incredible. I mean, obviously it's been on my radar for the last 10 years as I've been a professional, but was really close to making it this year. This is by far my best season on the PGA Tour, and really the most consistent past 2 years of my PGA Tour career. So it's just kind of icing on the cake for a great year, getting back in the winner's circle, and just means a lot more to be picked for a Ryder Cup team and be able to represent your country.
You know, you use the word goals there. And before the season starts, do you sit down and whether it's in your head or maybe it's on your phone, you make a note or whether it's on paper, do you make preseason goals before the season starts?
I do a little bit. I mean, obviously getting in the Tour Championship every year is a big goal of mine because it means you're playing some really good golf and getting to Atlanta every year, ending the season at that tournament. You get in all the majors, you get in all the World Golf Championships, and obviously you're playing some really good golf to be in the top 30 final rankings. But I don't necessarily make saying winning majors or winning golf tournaments. I feel like every week my goal for that week is to get in contention and with nine holes to play, have a chance to win the tournament, whether that's two shots, three shots, four shots from the lead. Getting in contention every week is always a goal of mine. And really whatever becomes of that, it happens. I don't really set out saying I want to win this many tournaments. I want to win these majors. I mean, obviously playing in the Ryder Cup, having Stricker as a captain, we're great friends, and he's been a big mentor of mine, a great friend of mine for really my 10 years on tour. So that was obviously one of the goals in the back of my mind, but it's hard to fill in the gaps of getting there. And for me, getting in contention a lot, getting back in the winner's circle, having a chance to win a good many golf tournaments this year helps fulfill that goal.
I mean, let's be honest. You should have won three times. I'm not putting it on you that you didn't win that third time. I think we all know as golf fans watching that tournament on television exactly what happened there, and being on the clock completely changed your changed the way you had to play the rest of that round. You were playing in a hurry. You were in a hurry from green to tee, and it really, really changed. It could have been three wins and could have been an even better season than it already was, which was a significantly great season. And number 11 in the official world golf rankings, to be the number 11, the 11th ranked player in the world. I mean, do you ever sit down and think about that? That according to these rankings, there's only 10 people in the world that play golf better than Harris Ingles.
Yeah, to me, it's just a number. I mean, there's a lot of good players on the PGA Tour, on the European Tour, and I know any given week, anybody can win. So to me, that's just a number. I mean, it was cool to crack the top 10. I think I was 10th at one point. So yeah, that's cool, but that's never really a goal of mine. I just love competing. I love trying to be in tournaments every single week. And to me, that's just a number of, gearing up for the Ryder Cup on paper. Yes, we're the much better team. The rankings say that, the stats may say that, but it's still golf and it's match play and anything can happen. And that's the way I kind of look at it. I mean, yeah, I'd love to be number one in the world, but I wouldn't say that's a goal of mine. Right. Once again, that's a culmination of doing a lot of the right things and playing some good golf and having a chance to win a lot of golf tournaments. So, yeah, it is cool, but I don't sit there at night thinking about, yeah, I'm the 11th best player in the world. I'm always trying to get better. I'm always trying to work on my craft on the golf course of trying to do things every single day to get better and see how far I can climb.
You know, Harris, maybe you can explain it before we delve deeper into the Ryder Cup, because there is so much to talk with Ryder Cup right around the corner and you guys getting prepared for it. As far as going back to, I don't think the average person, and including myself, understands what being on the clock means and how that affects your play in between shot to shot, hole to hole.
Yeah, it's one of my pet peeves on the PGA Tour of, I don't necessarily think I'm a slow player, but when you play in threesomes on Thursday and Friday, like the round is really slow. I mean, no matter how you shake it out, we're going to play in 4 hours and 50 minutes to 5 hours every single time.
Wow.
So you get in a certain rhythm of you're waiting a lot. You feel like you can take your time on some important shots. Because during the round, you have some easy shots where you don't have to think about a whole lot. And you have some shots that are pretty crucial, either if water is involved or a tough tee shot where you need to be 100% committed to it and know the number and know exactly what shot. So sometimes that takes a little longer to get that commitment level than other shots where it's an easy chip, an easy 30-foot straight uphill putt. Like that doesn't take a whole lot of time. Right. But yeah, being on the clock is not a whole lot of fun because I don't like feeling rushed when I'm playing golf. And you want to be able to have that conversation with your caddy to calm down and talk about other stuff besides golf. And I feel like when you're on the clock, it kind of throws that away. It throws off your rhythm. You're having to eat faster, drink faster,
do everything
faster. I mean, walking from the green to the tee should be a time to kind of gather your rhythm, hang out with your caddy a little bit, talk to your other playing partners, kind of enjoy the round a little more. And when you're on the clock, you have no time for that. It's all business the whole time, speed walking in the next shot. It's just, it's tough. I mean, I understand why we're in that situation. I understand why there is a time limit, because guys would take their sweet time on every single shot. I mean, a lot of guys would abuse it. I'm not a guy that would abuse it. And some people would say like, well, you would have taken that fine or whatever, or the shot penalty. I mean, if you would have just slowed down and won by four shots, you would have gladly taken a one shot penalty and still won the tournament. But that's not really how I operate. I want to be fair to everybody in the field. And I know that you have to play golf in a certain number of seconds. And I was trying to abide by that. And yet it got me out of rhythm. It rushed me, but if I didn't go through that in that situation, I probably wouldn't have changed anything in my routine when I get under the gun like that on the clock.
So you will change something moving forward?
Yeah. It's more my caddy.
How do you work on that?
Yeah, it's more, I can't really change anything in my routine, but you got to speed up the process of getting the number, getting the carry number, getting the pin number, and speed up the process of how far you want to hit it. And some holes, it might be my caddy walking ahead and getting me the ball faster, so he'll have the number right when I get there, instead of spending the 10 to 15 extra seconds walking off from a yardage marker, going through the yardage book. Like, he'll save me probably 15 to 20 seconds by doing that. So I can go through my routine and not have to feel rushed doing all that, the process.
I just feel like it's unfair to put the whole group on the clock, where if there's one person who tends to be playing slower than the other player or players in the group, then that guy should be put on the clock or penalized a shot or whatever they decide to be. But to let one person spoil it for all three, which could end up costing somebody a tournament, which did happen, I don't feel like that's fair. But then once again, I don't have all the answers, and you're playing out there and you see it much better than we do.
Yeah, and I talked to a couple of rules officials after it happened the next few days, and obviously they were very apologetic, saying like they obviously didn't want that to happen, but they had to do it. They had to put us on the clock. But I think more and more you're going to start seeing individual guys get timed, like you said, of if one guy's playing slow, it shouldn't be the whole group's fault to get back in position. So I think you're going to see more and more the slower guys getting timed individually, which I think will help out, and it's fair to the other playing partners in the group.
Right. I agree 100%. But let's get into Ryder Cup, because I mean, it really truly is, it's something special. We as Americans look forward to it every single couple of years that we get the Ryder Cup. I know the Europeans, for some reason, it feels like it's such a huge deal to the Europeans. They usually show up every time. You know, Ian Poulter, for example, Ian Poulter shows up for Ryder Cup like nothing else. I mean, it's unreal. Do you feel that with this team? Does it feel like something special, as you guys have already been together once at least?
Yeah, I feel like the urgency is there. And I've never played on a Ryder Cup team before, but we haven't fared very well in the Ryder Cups, the previous Ryder Cups. I don't know what the record is, but I think you got a lot of fresh blood in there, a lot of younger guys that don't have that bad taste in their mouth of losing to the Europeans. You have a lot of guys on the team. I was talking on the past week of they played some Walker Cups and crushed the GB and I team. So I think they're ready to go. And I think it's going to be a fun team. We got great camaraderie, and I think everybody is ready to go, and had some great practice rounds up there. But we love playing for Steve Stricker. He gave us a couple rah-rah moments this weekend, and that's awesome. We understand what it means to him, and we understand what it means to be one of the 12 guys playing for this country and how big this event is. So I think we'll be ready to go. I think everybody's going to come back this week and prep and get ready for it and show up ready to go.
So how and when did you find out? Did you get that call and how'd it go?
Yeah, I can't remember what day it was, but it was either Monday night or Tuesday after the Tour Championship. I had a good feeling that I was going to get picked. Nobody had told me officially that I was going to be on the team. I'd played some with Justin Thomas and Jordan the previous weeks, and they were kind of asking me like who I'd want to play with and all that. And I'm like, guys, I don't even know if I'm getting picked. So that'd be the first thing. It's like, if I'm on the team, these are the guys I feel like I should play with or would gel with. But being up there in the points rankings, I've had a great relationship with Strick and Davis Love, Zach Johnson, being from down here, being vice captains. Know a lot of the guys on the team. Obviously, being the younger guys, I've have played a lot of golf with them. Played on the Walker Cup team with Cantlay and Jordan Spieth. So I feel like I fit with those guys really well. And but it was a great phone call. it was lucky that I was looking at my phone when Strick called. I had his number in my phone, and I knew it was going to be a good phone call as opposed to, hey, calling me to say I'm not going to be on the team. But it was great. Obviously, he's very excited about it. He's very excited about the guys he picked and loves the team. So I'm happy to be playing for him, and I know he's going to be putting 100% effort into it.
Were you home when that call came through, or were you out somewhere with the family?
No, I was actually home. We're in the kitchen, and I don't know. Like I said, it was kind of a weird.
Was it one of those that comes up on the phone, and you kind of show it to your wife, like, look?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Like, oh, Strick's calling. I need to answer this, and it was great. It wasn't too long of a conversation. I know he had a busy day of calling the guys, making the hard phone calls where guys weren't on the team, and then calling all the six guys that made the team. So I know he was busy and taking care of a lot of business, but man, it was very relieving to get that phone call and know for sure that I was on the team.
Well, it's definitely well-deserved. That's for sure. I mean, it was a great season, and it's something you deserve to be rewarded with, and something that I know you don't take lightly and that you will give your all. What was that first practice session like you guys had this week? So you guys met over the weekend?
We did. It was more kind of getting everybody familiar with the course, making it easier for next week when we go there to not have to feel crammed of playing all these practice rounds prepping for the course. So it gave us a great idea of how it's going to be playing, what shots to work on. And we played a little bit alternate shot. I mean, we never play alternate shot. So we played a little bit of that, figuring out which guys should tee off the odds, which guys should tee off the evens, and kind of figuring out. I feel like I have three or four guys that I could play with, but kind of narrowing it down on who's going to play with who. And I don't know if Strick wants me to divulge that right now. But, yeah, we're making the prep easier for next week of not feeling crammed. We got a lot of stuff, and then we just got the schedule today of a lot of dinners, a lot of, you know, the opening ceremony. And there's a lot more going on next week than just golf, but it's stuff you have to do, and you got to prioritize your time, and it kind of helps us not have to spend 6-7 hours at the golf course every day where we can rest and get ready for the tournament, because some guys playing 36 a day, I mean, it's jam-packed golf, and you got to be well rested for the tournament.
Now, the golf course, is it playing long? Is the rough down? Is it high? Like, how exactly, who do you see benefiting the most from the golf course setup?
Yeah, the rough was not that high. Fairways were pretty generous. It's a great puzzle piece of some short holes where you can send it up there close to the green, but the bunker is really penal. And holes where you're smashing driver and having 6 or 7 iron in the green. So what I could see is if you miss greens out there, it's going to be really penal, because the rough terrain around the greens, yeah, they have bunkers, but it's not normal bunkers that you see in America. I mean, you can get some really nasty lies. I mean, Pete Dye did the golf course, so you're going to have some really quirky lies. Some, you could be in the 4 to 5 inch heather. You could be on a downslope of a bunker trying to hit it, trying to launch it 10 feet up in the air. So that's what I could see is this going to really benefit the team that hits the most greens in regulation? And I would say the fairways aren't really hard to hit. But if you do miss the fairway, it's going to be really penal.
Now, what about the weather? I know we're still, you know, like I said, almost 10 days out or not quite, but as far as the weather, it could be cold. The wind can blow like crazy there, as we know. What are you guys expecting there?
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of expecting anything. I mean, I guess the future forecasts say it's going to be pretty nice. Lows in the mid to upper 50s and highs in the mid 70s. So
that's gorgeous.
I guess up there it can change at any moment. And we kind of saw that a little bit this weekend of a couple times it kind of misted rain, got windy, and then the sun would come out and the wind would die down and the mosquitoes coming out. That was, I didn't realize there was that many mosquitoes up there, but
We're all done here in our neck of the woods.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to bring our thermal gear. We're going to bring our rain stuff. I mean, you got to be prepared for anything, but hopefully the weather's going to be nice. Hopefully the course will firm up. I know they want the greens to firm up and make it even harder to hit the greens.
I know Stricker's the coach. You've got Phil, Freddie, Jim Furyk, Davis Love III, and Zach Johnson are all the vice captains and assistant coaches that are helping. What kind of tone has been set with the team as you guys, you know, got together this weekend and moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, Strick's a pretty serious guy. I mean, he doesn't really talk a ton or cut up a ton. Like, it's pretty serious. And then, like, Jim Furyk, I walked around a lot with him, and he's very much the same mindset. Davis is as well. And then you got Phil Mickelson, who is the fun, joking, likes to cut up. So you got a lot of – and Freddie Couples as well. Like, he loves to joke around and cut up. So you got a lot of different personalities in there, but they all respect each other, and they all respect that this is Stricker's show to run right now. And everybody's rallying around him. And however he wants to run it, we're going to be there supporting him 100% and being behind him. So it's cool having a lot of those legends in the game being vice captains, the guys that I grew up watching and right. respected. It's really cool to be in the team room with them, kind of listen to their advice. And because a lot of those guys have played tons of Ryder Cups. They've been in my shoes before. They know what I'm going to be feeling on the first tee. So it's cool to have those guys bounce questions off of and being able to help as much as possible.
Now, as far as the team chemistry, obviously it's been talked about, the elephant in the room. You saw it firsthand this past week. Is there any tension between Bryson and Brooks, or is there, does that appear to really have been squashed as they said it has?
I think it has been squashed as well. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see something come out from Brooks or Bryson publicly about they're over it. They're squashing that. So from what I can tell, it's over and done with, and everybody's moved on. And frankly, I think everybody's kind of tired of it, of how that's still a narrative. And they're both grown men, and yes, they could have their differences, but they got to be able to come together and play for a team and get over their personal issues. So I think you're going to see a team that's all in for each other and ready to go put their heart on the line, put their game on the line for this country.
I mean, I think it's interesting that we do have a lot of fresh young blood, like you've said, but we've got some veterans that have played before. Do you, as a new guy, fresh young blood on the team, do you lean on some of those guys for, you know, what to do, how to handle it, how to prepare?
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's kind of, even when I came on the PGA Tour, I leaned on Davis a lot. I leaned on Zach Johnson a lot, Matt Kuchar, Lucas Glover. I mean, anytime you can hear some of their stories and their experiences, because they've done this exact same thing that you're doing, I think that can only make you more prepared, make you better for handling those situations. And I definitely have a list of guys that I want to call, past Ryder Cup guys that I want to call this week and take some tidbits from each of them of how they handled certain situations, how they prepare for alternate shot, how they play alternate shot. Because I know they want to help, and I know they want to see us win next week. So
right.
There's definitely 5 or 6, 7 guys I want to call and bend their ear and hear what they have to say.
You know, you mentioned it earlier. Europe really does seem to get fired up for this, and the U.S. team looks so much better on paper. How do you guys keep from getting a little overconfident? When you look at the world golf rankings, every single player on the U.S. team is in the top 20, and I think they have 2. I mean, how do you guys not get overconfident?
Yeah, I mean, we see these guys every single week, and we know how good they are. And it's just that. I mean, the media looks at it on paper and says the U.S. team is way better, and Europe comes into it feeling like they're an underdog every year. They got nothing to lose. They're going to take down the mighty U.S. team. And we don't see it that way. We we played against these guys every single week, and they've got just as good of players as we do. I mean, match play is a totally different game. I feel like it's easier coming into it as an underdog, and they have that killer mentality, and we've got to get that from them. I guarantee we're not overconfident. We know what we're up against. We know they're going to hole a lot of big putts. They're going to chip in. They're going to do all the crazy stuff that you see in match play. We just got to be prepared for that and ready for that. And you got to be able to take it on the chin and give it right back to them. It's going to be a battle. We know we're not that much better than them. We know we're better than them, but you got to bring it. You got to bring it every single day and be ready for anything.
Now, I know you said earlier you don't want to say who you think you'll play with, but are there some guys on the team that you just feel more naturally comfortable with playing with when you're in these team situations?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's a good part of my personality, a good part of my game is I feel like I can fit with anybody. I feel like I do everything pretty well. And, I mean, on Monday, I played with four other guys, Colin and Tony and Bryson and Scotty Scheffler, four guys who are totally different. And I feel like I get along with all those guys. I can play golf with any of those guys. I feel like me and a few other guys on the team can fit with almost anybody. So it's more about mixing and matching of who's playing well, who's going to tee off the odd holes, who's going to tee off the even holes. That's where we got to look at the stats to kind of guide us on these are the guys who I should play with and kind of figure it out in the practice rounds.
Are there some people that it has nothing to do with personality? Are there just some guys that you just don't match up well with that you think you'd be better off not playing with?
I don't think so. I literally think I could play with every single guy on that team. Other guys may be different. But I feel like literally I could play with anybody, and I'm going to put it on strict of whatever role he wants me to play, whoever he wants me to play with, whatever time, I'm going to be there and give it 110%.
Now, how much goes into, for example, you said some guys may play 36 in a day. Is that a case of you go to Stricker and say, hey, I'm hitting it so good, I want to play 36 today? Or is it a case of is he asking you guys who you want to be paired with and how much you want to play?
Yeah, I think that's a big key of it is being transparent with Stricker and the captains of, hey, man, I'm not really feeling today, or I'm a little tired. I'm not mentally. I just played a tough match. I'm not really mentally ready for the next one. And that's what they said, to be transparent with them of you could play the last four holes and you start flushing it and seeing the lines, feeling really comfortable, and you're like, man, I'm ready to go play this next match. Like I don't care that I just played two matches in a row the past 2 days. Like I'm ready to go. So it's a little bit of that on the fly of being transparent with those guys and really saying you feel good or you don't feel good.
Right. Now, I know that Stricker has said that Tiger was not able to come out and be on site, but was going to have a part as much as he could into the match. Have you had any contact with Tiger whatsoever, or has the team?
I haven't, but I know him and Stricker have been in contact probably daily. I know Tiger wants to be up there. I think him coming up there is going to be more about him and his health. And he feels like it would probably take away from the team, which I totally understand and totally respect. I mean, he's got to get healthy and do his rehab and all that. But I know he's going to be a part of the daily conversations and Strick is going to talk to him a bunch. I mean, I'm sure a lot of guys on the team will be talking to him, if not phoning him in every single night in our team meetings of hearing what he has to say.
Right. Harris, how will you prepare? So as we sit here today, it is Wednesday the 15th. The Ryder Cup starts on the 24th. So we've got 9 days. How will you prepare between now and when you leave for Wisconsin?
Yeah, it's pretty much.
Will you hit balls today? Will you shoot short game? I mean, yeah. I suppose.
I'll do a little bit today and kind of build up. And we just played a good bit of golf the last 2 days. But it's definitely a fine line between being prepared and mentally rested. Because if I kind of go overboard in my preparation, I'll just show up to Whistling Straits tired and then have to do a whole different prep session with all the dinners and all the other stuff we have to do. Like, you don't want to show up on Friday morning if I'm playing Friday morning and be tired. Right. So I definitely want to be prepared. I mean, I know Zach is going to be here this week, so I might play some alternate shot with him, play some golf with him. I mean, I love competing. I love playing holes when I'm on my off week, and I'm going to really prepare like I do any other tournament. It was great seeing Whistling Straits and knowing what shots I'm going to have around the green, knowing what shots I'm going to have in the greens and working on my tee ball. So it's nice to be able to see the course before and practice a lot of those shots this week.
Right. As far as alternate shot goes, and there's been a lot of talk of this, and I don't know how important it is, but I want to ask somebody who's going to be a part of it and has played alternate shot. As far as the golf ball goes, if you use a different golf ball than, say, your partner does, how much does that go into play of who's going to hit what shot and when? Because the golf ball does respond differently.
Yeah, that's a great question. So when I'm playing alternate shot, I always want to be hitting my golf ball on an approach shot. I think off the tee, it doesn't really matter that much whether your ball is a little spinny or not spinny, but man, if you have a 165 yard shot, that's when it matters most, of controlling the spin, controlling trajectory, especially if it gets a little windy out. So I think the whole strategy is, if I'm going to hit the second shot, then my partner is going to tee off with my golf ball and vice versa when they're hitting the second shot. So that's kind of been my strategy. And I think that's universal for the team.
Are there any other strategies that go into match play, things like that, that we really don't normally think about?
I mean, that's where the stats play in on who tees off odds, who tees off evens of, I think we calculated, I think the front nine, the best putter on an alternate shot team is going to have 8 birdie putts in the first 11 holes. So you want to have your best putter, I think, teeing off evens. I can't really remember, but I think that's right.
There's so many stats I can completely see.
There's a lot of stuff like that where it's still you got to go out and play golf, but
right.
There's ways to flip the odds in your favor, flip the percentages in your favor a little bit of figuring out what shots guys like and who wants to be putting a lot.
When you're hitting that second shot, are you hitting to a spot where, or maybe let's say you're on a par five and you're hitting the second shot, are you asking your partner like, hey, where do you want it? Is there a certain place you want me? Do you want to be on this side or that side or here or there?
For sure. For sure. And I think that's where the prep goes in of playing a good bit of golf with your partner, of knowing what shots he likes into the greens. Because I feel like I'm a pretty conservative player, but on par fives, I definitely, if I have any chance of going to the green, I'm going to hit it around the green somewhere, because I feel like I can get up and down from inside of 30 yards rather than laying it up to 120. I feel like my percentages go way up of getting the ball up and down around the green. So it's definitely figuring that out with your partner of what shots they like, because it could be totally different than you. Like they might rather you lay up to 120 yards. They feel like they can get it up and down 60% of the time rather than hitting it up by the green and get an awkward lie. And maybe they're not feeling very good about their chipping. So it's definitely being on the same page with the partner and figuring out their game and kind of catering to their game when you're playing golf.
Right. Which also goes back to a pairing, making sure that when Stricker pairs you and the assistant coaches pair guys together, that you put guys together who do work with the same philosophy.
Exactly.
If you're a guy that likes to hit it up around the green on the second shot, another guy wants to be 120 back, that might not be the best pairing for that match.
Yeah. Yeah. And a guy that, say, is a par five or a par four that it bottlenecks at 310 or something. And he's like, man, just hit 3 wood and just put me in the fairway. I don't care if I have a 6 iron or a 9 iron.
Right.
Put me in the fairway and I can hit it close to the hole. So
I'd be a good partner on that hole, because I don't hit it very far. So I'd be a good partner on that hole. I can hit it straight, but I don't hit it far.
There's definitely way more strategy that goes into it, an alternate shot. And you gotta know your partner. You gotta know the strengths of those games, maybe even the weaknesses of those games, of what makes him uncomfortable. And as we go into next week, and obviously you're going to go through some tougher times of losing a couple holes, making a mess of a couple holes. Obviously that's going to happen, but how does he like to be pushed? What does he not like you to say to him? Like, that's where I want to know, talking to his caddy a lot, of what makes him tick, what pumps him up, what should I not say?
Right.
Because you got to both be on the same page, and you want to be able to push them and bring the best out of them, but you also don't want to say something that pisses them off or irks them a little bit. So you got to kind of do some homework on what their personality is and what gets them going.
What's been your biggest eye-opening moment so far that's different from, obviously, you've been a Ryder Cup fan leading up to this. You've watched Ryder Cup. You have these perceptions in your mind of what you expected it would be like. What's been the most eye-opening moment and different from what you thought would happen?
It's just a big production. Like, going there this weekend, I mean, the stages are set up, the bleachers. I mean, it's a really – and obviously no fans are in it yet. So it's a big production. It's weird eating dinner with all these guys and – being on the same team, they're not trying to kick your ass every single week, or you're not trying to beat them. It's kind of weird them pulling for you finally of, hey man, playing great. Let's go get it this week. And it's just kind of different of you kind of spend all year trying to beat these guys. And now you're on the same team doing anything you can for each other. So it's really cool. I haven't been a part of the team like that in 10 years, and it's really cool. That's what I've missed about playing golf at Georgia or playing golf in the Walker Cup in 2011.
Yeah, it's definitely a big adjustment because, like you said, used to, when you go to a golf tournament, it's Team Harris versus Team everybody else. Well, now it's Team USA, and so now you're pulling for a guy where if he is struggling a little bit, you're pulling for him to fix it, or maybe you're even willing to help him a little bit. Versus usually you're like, hey, I see something that guy's doing wrong. I'm not saying a word because you want to win that week.
Yeah. I mean, there is I plugged a ball on a par four this week, and it was a bad plug. I mean, I was pretty close to the pin, but we're all kind of teaching each other the different methods of how to get it out of that line. It's kind of cool to see how guys do it differently, because at a regular tournament, nobody would really give away their secrets of how to hit that certain shot. So it's you're playing with some of the best players in the world, and they're kind of giving away their secrets of how they would play that shot. So any other tournament, if we're playing in the Masters and that happens, there's no way they're gonna come in there and show how they do it. So that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool to see, and it shows everybody's on the same page and everybody's collectively playing for the team.
That's great until you use that little key that he teaches you to beat him in a regular PGA Tour event next year. Yeah. And he's like, oh man, but you know what? That's just part of the team game and what makes it different. What I did want to ask you is something that I've noticed as I watch, literally, I will watch golf until it drives my wife nuts, between college football, pro football and golf. My wife's like, do I even have a husband? I'm like, no, I'm sorry. But we'll have to fit dinner in some other time. I've noticed that setup a lot of times, you take your right arm and you kind of pull on the crease and your elbow and your left arm when you're setting up. What are you doing exactly?
Yeah, it's more for my takeaway. When I get off, I would say my club head gets low and inside, and I don't have a lot of set to it. So I'm just really working on keeping the club head outside my hands a little bit and making sure the club head stays pretty high. Because definitely when I get off, my takeaway gets a little fast and my hands go a little in and low. And then I'm kind of spending the whole rest of the swing catching up for the fault I have in my takeaway. So I've been working with Justin Parsons for probably coming up on 3 years now, and takeaway has always been a big component of my swing of when I do get off, my takeaway gets off. But if my takeaway is good, then the rest of my swing is good. So it's something I've constantly had to work on and practice. And that's kind of a, your feels change, I guess, throughout the year. And that has just been a feel of mine for the last couple months of really feeling the club head staying outside of my hands.
Right. I've worked, you know, what's funny is I've taken so many lessons, and takeaway is my biggest struggle as well, too. It gets me in a bad position to where I have a lot to fix on the way down. And mine too is inside, club gets behind my hands, and then I was either lifting with my arms instead of turning. And it's just, it's crazy how that one little, but it makes me feel 10 times better to know that you, a Ryder Cup team, two-time winner, struggles with the same thing. I don't feel so bad now.
Yeah, and that's the thing with golf. I mean, I've been playing this game for a long time, as I'm sure you have, and it's all about maintenance and doing the little things like that every single day to make it correct when you're feeling the nerves, when you're feeling the pressure to do all these reps and to work on this a whole lot where it becomes ingrained and you don't even have to think about it.
You know, in case anybody was wondering, the PGA Tour offseason has ended, and we are starting a new season starts tomorrow. I mean, I love it. I love that golf is pretty much year-round. After Ryder Cup, Harris, where will we see you again? Obviously, you'll defend in Hawaii at the Century this year, but where will we see you in the fall season?
Yeah, I mean, I love Napa this week is one of my favorite tournaments. It's such a cool place, but getting prepped for the Ryder Cup kind of throws that off a little bit. I love the Sanderson Farms tournament in Jackson. It's one of my favorite courses on tour, but again, coming off the Ryder Cup, everybody has said how grueling of a week that is, how mentally tired you'll be after that week. So I feel like I'm going to take that week off, and then playing the two Vegas tournaments, the Shriners and the CJ Cup. They moved from Korea to Las Vegas this year. So I'll probably play both of those. And then I'll play Mexico and RSM right now. I've played really well in Mexico. I've won there before. And then the RSM tournament's right outside my back door here in St.
Thomas. Home games.
So it's hard to not play that tournament. So I think playing four, if not five, tournaments this fall will be it for me, and then get started again back at Maui.
That's awesome. Well, good deal. Enjoy your time, man. I'm telling you, absolute best of luck to you, the rest of the Team USA in the Ryder Cup, and thank you so much for your time. I wish you guys the best, and hopefully we will talk to you next season as a Ryder Cup champion here on the Stripe Show podcast.
That'd be awesome. Thanks, Rogge. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it, man. Have a good one. And we will be back next week. We will talk to Webb Simpson on the week of the Ryder Cup. Webb Simpson has played in three Ryder Cups, so we'll get some insight on exactly what it's like to play in the Ryder Cup, what we can expect, and what we can expect moving forward from Webb and the PGA Tour. Thanks so much for joining us on another edition of the Stripe Show podcast.
Let's take a second to talk about the folks over at Encore Golf. Encore has earned a reputation across the golf industry and with golfers everywhere for its combination of value, performance, and customer service. Their team in Buffalo, New York, is flipping the script on golf technology through perimeter-weighted balls made with the high-density particles and proprietary nanotransitional layer, offering players enhanced accuracy, control, and distance. Encore recently added the Vero X1 to its suite of award-winning golf balls, one that already included the Golf Digest gold-rated Elixir and low-compression Avant 55. Through its full suite of golf balls, Encore can help transform any golfer's game. Visit encoregolf.com/Travis Fulton for more info about Encore and start revolutionizing your game. Now back to the Stripe Show podcast.